Welcome to the Always On podcast. I'm your host, Duncan McPherson. And on this podcast, our goal is to provide our audience, which are very high caliber fee-for-service professionals, with proven strategies and an enlightened philosophy on how to keep working on their business and on themselves personally and professionally. And to that end, we've got a legend on this conversation, Bill Cates. Arguably one of the most respected referral coaches in the sector, author of several books, one of which is called The Language of Referrals. And we got into what I think is bordering on a masterclass around how to be referable and how to position the concept of introductions in a very professional way, fueled by stewardship, not salesmanship. So I hope you like that. And if you do, make sure you spread the word. And if you have any ideas for guests that we should have on down the road, just let us know. Thanks for listening. Well, I cannot believe it's taken this long for Bill Cates and I to get on to a podcast and have a conversation about referrals. Bill, great to see you. How are you doing?
Great to be seen. Thank you for having me. You're right. It's been way too long. So let's have at it, huh?
Look at that backdrop. I've never seen the word referral more prominently displaced ever. So yeah, you're an unrivaled authority and so well respected in the industry, bordering on legendary. Everybody I talk to has so much respect for you. You're one of the rare people that's been in the business in our space for as long or maybe even longer than I have. I was joking with my wife the other day. I said, you know, I'm the proverbial 30-year overnight success story.
Yeah.
And she said, well, you don't want to rush into things, right?
That's good. Yeah, no point in rushing in, right?
Yeah. I mean, my motto is simple. I'm always right eventually. It's just not in a hurry. She's got her nickname for me is she calls me the smartest kid in summer school. So I don't know what your nickname is. What do you have one?
Junior.
Junior. Okay, I like that.
My wife calls me Junior because I'm misbehaving most of the time.
That's good. You got to have fun. There's no doubt. So, you know, you're a serial author. How many books have you written?
I've written seven. I have five in print at the moment. And I've got another one I'm writing.
Why did you feel the world needed another book on referrals?
Well, number one, things have changed over the years. Not a huge amount, but certainly they've changed. COVID certainly changed things a little bit. And I just want to keep on the cutting edge of what works, best practices. And I found that the biggest reason why people don't get as many referrals and introductions as they would like is just a lack of confidence. They're just not quite sure what to do and what to say. Hence the book, The Language of Referrals, which we'll talk about a little bit today. So it's about confidence. And, you know, does the world need another book on sales or leadership or customer service? Well, no. And I think my take on it is one that people like. And it had been a while since I'd written straight on referrals, and it was time.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right in terms of the evolution, both in terms of, you know, these forces of caveat emptor, caveat venditor. You've got to see your own business through your own perception, but also through the lens of the client and get their perspective. And that has evolved for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah.
We're like-minded on so many things. I too believe that the words matter. So is that what prompted ultimately the title, The Language of Referrals? Because my knee-jerk reaction when I see that title is, you'll provide for me a predictable set of scripting that I can personalize that will address some of those confidence issues. Safe to say?
Couldn't have said it better myself. You know, confidence comes from having a path, a roadmap, a process, whatever word you wanted, and then practicing. It's, you know, it's It's the path or the process plus practice equals confidence. And then confidence plus action equals the results. And it really does boil down to confidence. And what I found, and you've seen this too, especially around the asking for introductions, and I know we differ a little on that perhaps, and we can get into it, but that's usually where people get stuck, right? They when they come to me for coaching, they'll say, can I do this without looking like the creepy referral guy or cheesy referral guy? And it's those old methodologies that have been taught for so long that are advisor-centric and really just don't fit anymore. And people don't want to do that. They know there's something wrong with them and they know they're amiss, but they just haven't found the right way. So when I give them some language, and you said it right, that they will then personalize for themselves. I'm not expecting anyone to necessarily memorize what I provide. I mean, if it fits, fine. It's to personalize it. But the point is, when they find the language that works, then all of a sudden that strategy that wasn't accessible to them now is accessible. That asking for introductions where they never felt they could do it now becomes a possibility because they see a way, they see an approach that feels more natural than what they had been taught in the past.
Okay, well, that's pretty perfect. And first of all, any distinction in terms of your approach, our approach, I think a lot of it might be semantics. I mean, there's so many different financial professionals out there with different worldviews and perspectives. I mean, where we're completely in sync is just earn the right.
Yes.
Be referable.
Yes.
That's the absolute foundation. And I'm sure you've met many financial professionals who focus so much on the cause, not so much on the effect. Just be referable, moral compass sky high, all the qualities you would ask for, dependable, predictable, admirable, to the point where they don't even go there. They don't even talk about referrals, and yet they attract them.
Yes.
Because clients feel they're doing a friend a disservice by not making the introduction. And I know that's at the core of the language of referrals, is be referable, right?
It is. It's part two of the book. Part one of the book is the mindset, the thinking, the inner language, if you will, the self-talk that we have around this that often gets in our way. But the part two is, yeah, the language of becoming super referable. And you're right. Is it possible to build a successful business without asking for referrals or introductions? And the answer is yes, of course it is. And that all the things that you talked about and more, the great experiences that clients go through with you. And, you know, to become, you know, a remarkable means worthy of remark, right? So you provide and create a relationship that's worthy of remark to others. The place where it sometimes disconnects, if you will, or it doesn't work for some folks, is sometimes they're not always getting the right type of referrals and introductions. Mm-hmm. The unsolicited don't always fit their book of business. And sometimes they'll take people on out of a sense of obligation for the source, which I think can sometimes be a mistake. If it's a close family member, part of the household, if you will, then of course it makes sense. But you don't want to take someone on just because someone introduced you to them if it's not a good match, because you're not the right advisor for them, right? So sometimes it's a quality of who they get introduced to issue. And what I found mostly, and of course there are always exceptions to all of this, becoming highly referable, creating great relationships, great experiences, and all the things that you mentioned will create at least incremental growth. We should all be getting some of these without asking, just because we're doing good work for people. But to create that exponential growth, that multiplier effect, or sometimes I just liken it to compound interest, it's compounding of our client base, right? Then a level of proactivity becomes, in my book, pretty important. The proactivity can be simple, could be just teaching clients who you serve the best, how to recognize someone who might want to seek your advice. We're not really asking directly, but we're educating them a little bit. I mean, the last thing we want is our clients to wonder if we're taking on new people, right? We don't want to hear, are you still taking on new people, right? If you are, then make sure you let them know that you are. So there's that. That's the actually part four, three of the book, sorry, which is the language of encouraging and promoting introductions. And that's before we ask. And then if we ask, and if we ask in the right way, then it's a little bit of a turbocharger to the process.
Okay, you covered a lot of ground there. Right up front, I am stealing that position on remarkable.
Well, fine, because I stole it from someone else somewhere along the way. So, by, you know, just like money through the universe, it flows. So do things like that.
Well, and, you know, I often joke about, I've got this rule of three. The first time I hear something, I'll give the originator credit, even if they're a conduit. I'll say, it's like Bill says, be remarkable. Second time, I'll be like, it's like somebody said. Third time, it's like I've always said, like it just becomes mine after a while. So, yeah. Okay. So breaking some of what you talked about down, I have found, first of all, advisors, when they're behind the curtain, hypothesizing, theoretically going through the concept, the study of referability, the language, all of it. It's so different. The energy is so different than the moment of truth when they're actually in front of a client or a strategic partner. And then they have to, you know, actually let the rubber hit the road. And when they can feel their tension building at that moment of truth, they just pull the chute and they just don't go there. So have you managed to crack that code and in that confidence pace between theory and deployment?
Crack the code? I don't know. I'd probably be retired if I cracked it totally. But I do have a few thoughts on the topic. I think what stops people, what stops them in their tracks when they know what they want to say, they know how they want to say it, and then push comes to shove, they can't do it. Again, it is a lack of confidence, but there's sometimes more to it there. There's a fear. There's a fear that they're somehow going to hurt the relationship, come across as pushy or needy, unsuccessful. A lot of that head trash that I cover in part one around the inner language around that. So here is the closest thing that I've found to cracking through all that. All right. And it's nothing anyone hasn't heard already, but let me put a little exclamation point on it. And that is, it has to come from you truly believing in the value that you bring to people. It has to come from that place. It has to come from that place of your client's willingness to pay it forward to others. If you feel it, that it's all about you, then you won't do it. You haven't made that shift in your brain yet. So let me give you an example. Al Fox is a gentleman I coached for a long time. He's got, I think he's up to about 3 billion assets under management now. When I met him, he was at about 300 million, still pretty decent. But here's where he was stuck. He was stuck in, it's all about me. If I ask for referrals, if I ask for introductions. And by the way, Duncan, let me just ask you to remind me later to talk about the distinction between referrals and introductions, because people are hearing me say that word kind of interchangeably. Anyway, so he saw the whole process all about him, the way he'd been taught. I get paid in two ways or three ways, and I'm trying to build my business. I could use your help, all of that stuff we've all heard. And he just couldn't get past that. And it was this little switch inside his brain just flipped and realized, no, let's make it about the value. Let's make it about the people. They see the value in the work I do. Clearly, my value is worth sharing because other people are sharing it unsolicited. So that shift is all I had to do is that little shift. And I know, you know, theoretically it sounds easy, but I know that a lot of folks, I think in some respects, don't fully believe that yet. And I mean, I was doing a program, an in-person program, and a gentleman had been in business for probably about 20, 22 years. We're walking to lunch together after my session. He says, you know, Bill, I've been in this business for 20 years and I still sometimes wonder about the value I bring to my clients. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm sure glad I'm not his client, right? So, and when you bring that great value and create those great experiences and you become more referable, everything gets easier anyway. It's got to come from that. So that's where it is. It's like, let me give you some language around this, right? Since we're talking about that. You know, Duncan, it's great that George recommended we get together. I'm glad you're seeing the value of what we're doing. About a year ago, as you know, he and I chatted about who else should know about the work I do, who should at least be aware of what I do, and he thought of you. And I was wondering if we could talk about who's next. You know, who do we pay this forward to next? It could be as simple as that, right? I mean, is that going to hurt my relationship with you? Of course not. You might say, well, you know, let me give it some thought. That's probably the worst thing that's going to happen. But I certainly have at least planted the seed. Now you know I'm open, right? So it really can be very simple.
Well, first of all, you're right. I've met many advisors who have this sort of lingering, unspoken, even self-doubt. And I respect it because it's ultimately humility, where they don't believe their own hype. They don't have this air of self-importance. So they're not sanctimonious. It just keeps them honorable, but it can either serve you or hurt you. And it's nice to get to that point. And I think, you know, you mentioned in the beginning that, you know, if you crack the code, you'd be retired. I'm sure you could be retired now, but you probably love what you do. It's a calling. And I say to advisors all the time, position the concept of an introduction based on your sense of purpose.
Yes.
Not, you know, back to cause and effect, be at peace with any outcomes. Just immerse yourself in the activity and make sure that clients feel that the reason why you'll make yourself available to speak to a friend or a family member or a business associate is because you love what you do. Now, I want to connect that to something you also said. You can thread the needle around being referable and converting referability to referrals and maintain professional scarcity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
By removing the mystery for people so that they know this is not about who you're looking for. It's about who you're suited for. Look, if you want me to speak to a friend, I'll speak to your friend. They don't need to become a client. If they want to become a client, that's a separate conversation. Right. We're led by them. But it's got to be a good fit. Like we decided a long time ago not to try to be all things to all people, be all things to some people. My perspective there, and I'm sure you agree, is that there's a multitude of wins because the client listening to that is validated. I'm with the right advisor. I feel like I belong to something. And the more somebody feels like they belong to it, the more they compelled they feel to share it with the right people. You demystify and get them sifting before they're even talking to people.
Absolutely. First of all, the way I perceive it, and it's really the same thing, just different words, is if someone isn't right for, well, first of all, you said not who you're looking for, but who you serve the best or who you're geared to serve, right?
Who you're suited for.
Who you're suited for is what you said. And that's right. That's a client-centered perspective as opposed to you perspective. Now, if someone isn't right for your business, if someone doesn't have the wherewithal, the attitude, whatever the criteria is for you, if they don't have that and they're not right for your business and your processes and the work you love to do, then you're not the right advisor for them. And they should be working with the right advisor for them. So we've got to stop thinking that we have to take on everybody taking on folks who don't fit our business just because they were referred. So in the book, I provide a lot of different ways to promote introductions. And one, a simple one, is never too busy to see if I can be a resource for other people you care about.
Love that.
And the magic words are to see. Right now, if you're brand new in the business, anybody brand new, all right, you can take those words out, right? Never too busy to work with or meet with or see. Right? But for most, never too busy to see if I can be a resource. Happy to chat with them. Happy to, you know, if I'm not the right advisor for them, maybe I can find the right one for them or at least send them off in the right direction. It's all about that. And it creates that scarcity. You're right. It's got to be a good match. And you're still open. And you're still willing to help. It's almost, you could think of it as a service you provide to your clients. Now, I know some advisors struggle with that. It's a service I provide to my clients, asking for them for refer. Well, yeah, because they know people who aren't doing this work. And, you know, they know people who are getting bad advice, incomplete advice, no advice. And so I say to advisors, everyone listening, there's hardly a person on this planet that you couldn't sit down with and help in some way. Maybe just through some questions you ask. and send them off in the right direction, right? So let's let it all come from there. So let me make that distinction between referral and introduction. Let's think of the word referral these days for internal use only, not to be shared with public, right? That's the compliance disclaimer. When you're with a prospect, a client, a center of influence, anyone who has ability to connect you with someone, use the word introductions. Why? Because that's what has changed a little bit over the years, is we do need to get connected now. There was a time when you could say, you know, Duncan, you could say, you know, call George, use my name. And I'd call George and he'd actually pick up the phone and he'd say, oh, what did Duncan have to say? And it doesn't work so much anymore. And it's so well, right? So let's use the word that represents what we want, which is the introduction, the connection. So that's why you're hearing me use both words kind of interchangeably. So somebody was interviewing me the other day and asked me, all right, Bill, introductions, great, makes sense. So why'd you call the book Language of Referrals? Well, so here's a marketing lesson, right? One principle in marketing is that you always want to use terms, concepts, words that are already in the brain of the audience of that message. When you introduce a term that they're not familiar with or a concept, then it can confuse them. It stops them, the fluidity of their thinking. Now, I'm not saying you can't do that. Sometimes you can, but you got to be careful about cleverness and creativity getting in the way of clarity. And so when I say the language of referrals, people immediately know what I mean, even though I'm going to make the case for using the word introductions. So it's a marketing thing. You use the word that people get, understand, they're attracted to, and then you can go a little deeper and define what you mean by that. For instance, the word fiduciary. Most people don't know what fiduciary means. People are banding it around, you know, like everybody knows what it is. You know, Fisher Investments on there. No, we don't do that. We're a fiduciary. Okay, so what? It sounds fancy. Right. So whenever you use a word, a term that isn't already fluid in the brain of the receiver, define it immediately.
Yeah.
Right. So that's hence referrals, introductions, et cetera.
I get it. And you're right. I mean, so many people kill their marketing and branding strategy and complexity. There's such a huge distinction. Not just talking in terms of what you do, but what your value does and how that aligns with what somebody wants. And most financial advisors want a higher quality and quantity of referrals. The reason why I like it, how you buffered that with the word language, is that speaks to the stewardship, the professionalism, the positioning, not pitching.
Right.
Now, I do want to ask you about how this impacts strategic partners in a second, but I want to mention something to you. You and I have not talked about this before. This is something that I've seen emerge in the last few years. It's counterintuitive, but back to the whole professional scarcity and who you're suited for. And we've seen many advisors who have gone through a very high road professional approach to right sizing.
Okay.
Where they literally talk to their clients and look, you know, they'd say, I just want to let you know, we've made a pretty substantial decision. We engaged with a coach and we've made this decision to actually grow our business down. Hmm. We've got basically 300 clients today and by the end of this year, we're going to have 75 clients. We're not going to be all things to all people. It's because we've got clients whose needs are so complex and evolving very, very quickly. We need to manage our bandwidth, our capacity, so we can get out in front of and address those evolving needs. Now, of course, when an advisor says that to a client, the number one reaction is, did I make the cut?
Exactly.
And of course, the advisor's like, yes, of course you did. You're our ideal client. Your interests now and in the future align with our expertise and our process. We are going to go through a very respectful exercise where we're going to assign a certain group of our clients to a protege and to another firm where we think the fit is better. But just, I want you to know, going forward, I can't wait to show you how we're going to elevate the client experience and get out in front of your evolving needs over the coming years. Right. When that seed's planted, it activates another level of advocacy, not immediately, mm-hmm. but it lands in a, such a compelling way. So I would like your take on that. And then I'd like your take on, you know, we all know, based on the whole premise of MVPs, your most valuable prospects are the friends and family members of your favorite clients. Let them convince people on your behalf. Your second best MVP are the clients of strategic partners, other influencers, accountants, lawyers, and other service providers. Right. So I would like your perspective on how your philosophy and your process applies to those influencers as well.
Sure. A lot to unpack. First of all, whenever we make a decision about how we're going to run our business, and we're going to communicate that to our clients, and it could be as dramatic as what you represented there, or it could be even not so dramatic, we always have to make sure that we let the clients know the benefit to them, right? We've made this decision. Here's what it's going to look like moving forward, and here's the benefit to you. Always important to draw to that benefit, because they don't always necessarily get it, right? Mm-hmm. Also, another perspective around this is, and I mentioned this before, is what's best for the client, right? We're always doing what's best for the client, and what's best for some of the clients are actually to be working with someone else who has different processes that are best suited for them. Yeah. And so a little bit about that. And the last thing before we get to the partners is, this is a perfect time, whether you do it at this time or maybe the next time you get together, you educate your clients on that criteria, right? First of all, they love making the cut, right? They love being an ideal client, the A-plus client, whatever. Most of them do, at least. And, you know, it feeds the ego. It's okay. And at some point, you want to let them know some of the criteria. And it could be demographic. It could be psychographic, probably a combination. And what that does is then allows them to see the world through those glasses to see if someone is a good match for what you do. One other thing on that, by the way, the education of clients. My guess is everyone listening to this right now, if you took stock in the clients that you have in your business, most of them who decided to work with you had something going on in their life. They had a life event, money in motion, right? That put you on their radar where you wouldn't have been on their radar before. And so it's always great to teach your clients just the standard life event, money in motion, you know, make it fit your criteria. I get that. Selling a piece of property, selling a business, you know, inheritance, whatever fits. But let them know that so that they can see the world, at least subconsciously, through that lens. And then they can identify someone selling a business. Oh, yeah. Duncan talked about that, right? Now, partners, CPAs, attorneys, other trusted advisors. The principles, Duncan, are the same in that you have to become referable. Or as someone said in a session recently when I made the distinction between referrals and introductions, don't you mean introducible? Well, yeah, I suppose so. But so here's the deal. I was just coaching a guy earlier today on this. Clients have experienced your value firsthand. They've seen it. They felt it. They know what it's like. Centers of influence, these trusted partners, haven't necessarily experienced it. So they have to be educated on the process that you put them through. And that's why it takes time to become referable in the eyes of those folks. So they tend to be risk adverse anyway. And this is not something that usually happens overnight. Now, one of the things that bridges the gap a little bit here is the best way to meet these partners, these accountants, attorneys, et cetera, is through your clients. So at least someone has experienced the value firsthand. And so that adds to the borrowed trust. It elevates the, you know, the place you're starting from to begin with. So the advisors that I found that do the best around with centers of influence, two main things. First of all, they will take the time, they will be patient, they will sit with those folks and learn about their practice and who fits their business and how can I serve you in some form or another. And it's not necessarily reciprocal referrals. That isn't always part of the equation. And then make sure they understand my process. Here, from soup to nuts, this is what we do. And here's, you know, when we first meet people, and here's our onboarding process, and here's how we stay in touch, and here's how we adjust over time, yada, yada. And that takes a little time to make that happen. So that's important. And then the other part of that is to educate these partners, centers of influence, on what makes you a little different and who you serve the best. You know, this concept of differentiation, what makes you different? Everyone's pontificating, you got to know what makes you different. You got to know what makes you different. Well, I have a little different take on that. There are cases where that really does make a difference. For centers of influence, they really do want to know what makes you different because they may be sorting through who they know and who they should send to you versus someone else. If you're at that level where you have prospects coming to you and they're interviewing more than one firm, then yes, you do need to have that differentiator to help you distinguish what makes you a little different than some others out there. And by the way, if everyone else can say it, it's not a differentiator. And then where was we? Oh, yeah. Now, beyond that, what most people care about is, are you right for me? That's what they care about more. Not what makes you different, but are you right for me? Now, the differentiator might make you right for me. It might not. But I just wanted to get into that. That differentiator does become important with these centers of influence. And generally speaking, I'm a huge believer in this, and you and I haven't talked about this. The narrower, the better. The narrower our niche, to use a Canadian term, or niche, to use a U.S. term, the better. Everything gets easier. Referrals and introductions get easier. It's easier to demonstrate your value. Everything gets easier when you're narrow in your approach.
Totally agree. Okay, first of all, and again, we cover a lot of ground. This has the potential of becoming a referral masterclass. And I think you and I are talking on your podcast coming up soon too, right?
Yes, we're working on that.
So let's make sure that we build on this and not have the same conversation, because this could be very, very accretive in my view. But first of all, we're very, very much in sync. I say to my clients all the time, you can be at peace knowing every consultation we'll have, you can have a client listening in and not be embarrassed, because all roads lead to how you elevate their experience in terms of interacting with you. It's fully transparent, fully collaborative, and all roads lead to bettering the outcome for the client. Now, it's interesting. We talk about evolving. Bill, I've actually, you know, in the spirit of not using jargon, I've had advisors who use the term COI, not just behind the curtain for internal use only, but also when they're talking to clients and strategic partners. They'll actually refer to this sort of inner circle of partners as COIs. And I'm like, what does that mean? Circle or center of influence? That means the relationship exists to drive referrals. It's not what you say, it's what they hear. That's not a benefit to the client. We've actually asked advisors to rebrand. And some people say, look, this is semantics. Give me a break. Hey, you live by the rules you set. But we've asked advisors to rebrand from COI to a value-added support team, which is an acronym, VAST, VAST. You see, we've established a vast network of service providers we engage into the process. You see, a lot of advisors talk in terms, they'll say to a client, we'll refer you out. No. You don't refer anybody out. You engage others in. Mm-hmm. You're the hub. You're the keystone of the relationship. You'll engage others into your process. That distinction, in my view, is pretty key. The other thing I want to say, and I think this aligns with you as well, our framework Okay, so back to professional contrast and demystifying. Our framework is tell the world why, tell the world who, tell the world how. Tell them why you'll speak to a friend or a family member or a business associate. Tell an accountant why you'll speak to one of their clients. Remove that mystery, and it's rooted in your purpose to be a sounding board to help them look to the future with anticipation instead of apprehension. Tell them who. If somebody you introduce to us wants to become a client, it's got to be a good fit. And I love what you said there about the whole narrow casting. Don't worry about what you're not going to get. There's right. way less friction in right. the niche or the niche. What a lot of people say, there's riches and niches, right. right? So tell them why, tell them who, remove that mystery, and then tell them how. This is the process our clients use to make introductions. Okay, so that perfectly syncs up. And the last thing I just want to say that you prompted when you were elaborating there is, I love the notion around facts tell, story sell. I know several financial advisors that just will tell stories, actual legitimate stories that happen. So instead of asking for a referral, they'll just simply share an experience and say, you know, if let's say the advisor's talking to a client, how are you doing? You know, we haven't talked for a while. How's it going? And the advisor goes, you know, life is great. I just got to tell you, like, we're on cloud nine right now because a couple of days ago, a really great long-term client introduced us to a family member who was going through something that was just not very pleasant. And first of all, it was an honor, but also it just reminded me, this is why I became a financial advisor. And then they got a little granular on the story, you know,
right.
became widowed. It was very sudden, a lightning strike, totally unprepared and totally overwhelmed. And I could just see their apprehension melt away as we started to lay out a bit of a plan. And, you know, it just reminds me, this is why I love what I do. Nowhere are they asking for a referral. They're just investing a previous experience into how they're perceived and described. So why, who, how? I'd love your take on that. I've got a few other questions for you. I think we could probably go for another couple hours, but I've got a couple more questions for you, but I'd like your take on some of that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree totally. There's something you said there. Here's the process our clients use to introduce us. You know, that's a line, if you will, that could go in the language of referrals, because it's something that you can remember and use and repeat. One of the phrases at the end of the book, I have a little section I call it power phrases. Mm. It's one of them, my favorite. Let me just, before I get into where I was going to go, I'll deviate here. My favorite one of all phrases I've ever learned in my entire life. You ready for this? Drum roll, please. Three words. Tell me more. Anytime a client is telling you about something, just tell me more. Anytime okay. you're at an event with friends, family, colleagues, and they're telling you a story about their trip to Hawaii, whatever, tell me more. Someone has an objection to an idea, whether it's introductions or something else that you're suggesting, tell me more. That's one of the power phrases, right?
Okay, I got to pounce on that for just a second. Hold that thought just for a second, because that is so subtle and yet so profound. I think the lost art is, and this is, you know, a sound bite, but mm-hmm. the lost art is the more you emphasize being interested as opposed to trying to be interesting, you become more referable.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So the phrase I was getting to is, here's what I found works the best. Everyone likes to know what works the best, right? So if you say, you know, you've mentioned your sister and brother-in-law a few times, assuming we come up with an approach that feels comfortable for everybody, would you be open to introducing me to them? Can we chat about that? First of all, it's not going to hurt any relationship, right? They'll either be open or not, doesn't matter. And if they say, yeah, what do you have in mind? Well, here's what I found works the best. And now they may not want to do what you suggest, but it's good to have your favorite way. It's good to have a way that you know works pretty well most of the time, but being flexible, because here's what's going on. If I could draw a Venn diagram, here's what's going on in this introduction process. Your clients, your introducers, your partners, your vast team members, as you said, they want to protect their relationships. That's their prime directive here, right? Protect my relationships. Make sure this is comfortable for everybody. Now, you respect that for sure. And your prime directive is, how do I create a good connection, right? How do I get connected in a way that's relevant and will spark their interest and maybe earn the right to a Zoom call or an appointment? And so, you know, where those two come together is, here's what works the best. Here's, let's collaborate. Let's talk about, let's brainstorm, whatever word you want to use, on how to make this approach comfortable for everybody. And, you know, if we're lucky, Duncan, we'll spark their interest in hearing from me. So we want it comfortable and we want it to work. And so here's what I found works the best is one of the power phrases near the end of the book. The words matter. And the words matter for a couple of reasons. The words matter for ourselves because we need to find the words that we can say. And so, for instance, when I talk about asking for introductions, I often use the word brainstorm. Let's brainstorm a little bit. And I've been doing this for 30 years, and I know a lot of advisors don't feel comfortable using that word, which means they shouldn't use it, right? They can say explore, think about, put our heads together, collaborate, whatever word represents the dynamic of what we're trying to create here. No pressure, we're just brainstorming. So they matter to us, and they also matter on how they land on other folks. And we never know exactly how our words are going to land on other people, because what it means to me may not be the same as what it means to you. That's why it's always important to check in and to make sure expectations are matching and that we really are indeed talking about the same thing. Because when expectations mismatch, we know that can hurt the relationship, if not kill the relationship.
Well, and my takeaway from that is, and this is proven time and time again, I mean, there are a lot of speakers on referrals, and it's trying to be pretty slick. The most consistently attractive advisors are folksy and authentic.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not trying to be too esoteric. And, you know, even just saying, like, here's what works best. I mean, what I hear if I'm a client is that this isn't something new. This is what other people are doing.
Right.
Therefore, it must be real and it must be safe, because this is something, and I'm sure you're hammering the same thing, is that I just keep reminding advisors, look, unless and until I know exactly how referring my friend to you will ultimately come back to reflect on me, I'm not going there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Can I talk about that?
Of course.
Yeah. I address this in the book. The two main reasons why advisory clients don't give referrals, and there's probably others, but the two big ones are they're not sure how you would handle it, what it would look like. So it's an unknown. So it could be a perceived risk. Now, that's not true for all clients, but a lot of them do feel that way. And the other is the confidentiality. And so, especially and quite often with close friends and family members, it's like they don't want those people to know what they have or don't have. And so in the book, one of the ways I talk about how to promote the possibility of introductions, it'll go like this. So since the book is Language of Referrals, let me give you some language. And it'll go like this. You know, Duncan, a lot of our clients like to introduce the work we do to others. And I just thought if that opportunity ever presented itself to you, it would be good for you to know how we'd handle it, what it would look like, so you'd feel comfortable. First of all, the work we do is completely confidential. They will never learn about your financial situation from me, and vice versa. Even with family and close friends, we can't cross that line. Second of all, we handle this sort of thing with great care, meaning I'm not going to call people from out of the blue and surprise them and make them wonder, why did Duncan give my name out to this person? Nobody likes to get that kind of call anymore. I like to work through introductions. And what I mean by that is, if you think of someone, let's chat. let's come up with an approach that feels comfortable to you and you know will feel comfortable to them. And, you know, if we're lucky, we'll spark their interest in talking to me. But whatever we do, we're going to make sure it feels right for everybody. How does that sound, right? A little finishing. And they'll go, sounds great. You're not really asking straight out. So it's an easy yes, but you've planted a really, really important seed. Now you've handled the two of the big objections. So some of the things that you've shared and some of the things that I shared, it's not really asking. It's from the way I see it, it's culture building. We're building a culture of meeting people through other people. I once heard a guy say, and now I say it, back to your thing of used to quote him and now I quote myself, the way of the world is meeting people through other people. And the referral, the introduction is the warm way we get into their lives. And that's the way of the world. That's the way of our world. Clients should know that. And if they met you that way, they get it. So anyway.
Well, first of all, I love that. And, you know, backing up, every single business professional, executive, you get to a point where you're playing at a reasonably high level. We've all experienced the feeling of no good deed goes unpunished. Look, it's easy for me to refer my friend to a financial advisor, but it's just easier not to. It's just easier not to get involved. If you haven't demystified how this is going to reflect on me, what my friend's going to go through, if there's any uncertainty, it's back to your point about unspoken objections. I might not tell you why I'm not referring someone to you, but it exists. It's a block. And unless until that block has been addressed, and that's just in really good quality communication. It's funny, you reminded me, I was talking to an advisor about the who. So you think about the why, the who, and the how. Mm-hmm. I said to him, who's your ideal client? And he said to me, well, I'm looking for high net worth clients. And I said, let me stop you right there. Nobody cares who you're looking for. Who are you suited for? Where's the fit? His right. Knee-jerk reaction to that was, well, $5 million. Oh, and I said, oh, so it's a minimum. Here's the problem with that. I have no idea how much money my friends have. So you right. can't talk to me about who your ideal client is using that term. And it's funny, many advisors will say to me, they've had prospective clients ask them, what's your minimum? The best response to that is to say, it's a really good question. I need you to know up front, that's not how we think around here. There are some advisors who are frankly brokers. They're trying to make a deal, make a sale, mm-hmm. and have minimums. That's not us. For us, we think in terms of who we're best suited for, who's the best fit. And for us, it's primarily socioeconomic and demographic. These are successful first-generation business owners in the prime of their lives. They're maybe 5 to 10 years out from an exit, and they've got family dynamics. They've got all sorts of complex needs. That's who we're best suited for. We don't think in terms of the minimums. Now, clearly, a lot of our clients are either approaching or have achieved financial independence. But yeah, we know we stay in our lane. We know who we're best suited for. This language is just so compelling to somebody because it removes the mystery, but it's also, I think, attractive, not chasing, to your point, not being needy, just basically bringing it up, triggering a moment of recognition and appreciation and waiting for that to coincide with the stage of readiness. And we both been around the block. I'm sure a lot of your biggest breakthroughs with advisors came during periods of volatility. Advisors are at their highest level of referability when there's turbulence and noise and uncertainty, because that's where friends start to have doubts and are open to hearing a trusted confidant talk about somebody that they're satisfied with. Take on that?
Oh yeah, without question. When there's volatility or just a down market in general, as long as you are not the one hiding under your desk,
right?
As long as you are comfortable having the uncomfortable conversations and all of that, then yeah, you will stand out, because Look, people say people don't talk about money. Well, yeah, some people don't, and some people do, right? I mean, I have a group of buddies I play golf with, I hang out with. We talk about money. We know how much each guy has, and that. So people do talk about this sort of thing. Don't think they don't.
Or they're talking about things related to money. They're talking about geopolitical issues. They're talking about crypto, and they're talking about precious metals, and they're talking about NVIDIA and whatever AI. They're talking about things that can prompt a conversation.
Yes.
About a financial professional. It might not be how much I've got, but it's what's keeping me up at night or what I'm thinking about around my unmet needs. So this is stage of readiness stuff.
Exactly. And then, so, you know, one of your clients says, well, you know, my guy says, oh, I haven't even heard from my guy in the last 3 months. You know, you meet with your guy quarterly, really? Guy, gal, right? I mean, you know, together. So again, if you, are you remarkable? Are you worthy of remark? Let me hit one thing, because I know we're running thin on time. You know, we talked about why you do this and your vision and all that. If anyone struggles with this, let me give you a why. and borrow mine and until you find your own. And I frame it in terms of financial leadership. You help people make educated financial decisions that are in their best interest that they wouldn't make without you. That's your job. It takes courage to do that, right? It takes courage to question people's assumptions and to say, I'm sorry, I know, you know, Ken Fisher says, you know, annuities aren't good, but there is a place for annuities or whatever, right? It takes courage to take that leadership role. But isn't that what everybody does that's good at this?
Yeah.
Educated financial decisions that are in their best interest that they wouldn't make without you. It's what stops people from doing the good work that you bring to them is inertia. Mm-hmm. Let's understand what stops our clients or prospective clients from working with us or following our ideas or whatever. It's inertia. They're stuck. They're stuck in a pattern of a belief and or behavior. And so the law of inertia, body in motion tends to stay in motion, body at rest tends to remain at rest unless acted upon by an outside force. Using the word force carefully, we have to become that outside force. We are that person to get to know them and to question some assumptions so they'll start to look in a fresh way, and that will get them off out of their inertia. That'll get them moving and thinking in a different direction that they haven't thought before. Takes courage to do that. And so, and that's what makes this business so great, right? Because it's not easy. If it was easy, everybody doing it.
It's such a huge responsibility. It's a tremendous compliment to have second or third generation, fourth generation clients. By the way, I love when advisors start telling the world, we only accept new clients who are introduced to us. Like that language is so key. But back to your point about the calling, you know, everybody in the industry knows Jim Bowen. He's a legend at First Trust, and he calls the financial professional the guardians of wealth. You know, he's the biggest advocate for the financial professional. And I think the reason why I love this is that the more you emphasize your sense of purpose and the calling, you don't have to do this. You get to do this. You become more referable. And I also say, back to your point, you know, all those people that are being ghosted, they're predisposed. The people that are being ghosted by a financial professional because it's a little bit uncertain out there, those relationships are at risk. If you'll just empower your clients to basically look for that and feel compelled to make an introduction, as a good friend of mine says, the fish jump in the boat. Bill, listen, you're at the top of your game. I'm telling you, you found another gear here of relevance and impact. Couple of questions for you before we sign off. Number one, I think when we talked last, you mentioned that you've got some resources that you'll make available just as little nudges on referrals. And so how can people get a hold of some of that? How can people find you? And how can people get the Language of Referrals?
Sure. Thank you. Languageofreferrals.com. Languageofreferrals.com. There's a fun little video there and it describes what's in the book. And from there, it connects you with Amazon. If you're in Canada, make sure you go to amazon.ca. But it's there. It's in Audible. It's in paperback. It's in ebook. Another place to go, two more places. One is my podcast, which you will be on in not too distant future. I've interviewed so many effective, successful, articulate folks around what they're doing in their practice that's working for them, from targeting niche markets to client events to just all kinds of things. And that's topadvisorpodcast.com, topadvisorpodcast.com. And then the final thing, we have a lot of free resources. If you go to referralcoach.com/resources, referralcoach.com/resources, a lot of videos and guides and checklists. I like to say free, but valuable, right? I always lead. I always save my best for first. I'm always leading with value. Value, you know, money follows value. And so that's what that page is all about.
Yeah, terrific. And you know what? Ultimately, giving starts the receiving process. We all know how content marketing works and helps you test the waters and feel if there's a good sink. And then you can go deeper if you see the merit. But listen, this is terrific. Exceeded my expectations. I appreciate your time. I've got a quick question for you. I'm curious, if you don't mind me asking, the story on the flag behind you that's encased there.
That's my dad. My dad served in World War II. He was D-Day 6, so the sixth day of D-Day, he went over. Met my mom in England. My mom ran a Red Cross social club. She was the outgoing of the two. My father was the analytical statistician, but they met in England. So, my dad and mom are buried in Arlington Cemetery in Washington, D.C., or near Washington, D.C.
And that is a pretty special place. Okay, I'm glad you shared that with me. I feel the energy there, and everybody's got to spend some time at Arlington. And the last time I was there, not too long ago, I felt the energy of just staying at JFK's site, RFK's site right beside it. That is a very special place. So thank you for that. Okay, that's a wrap. Thank you very much for your time, and we'll look forward to seeing you on your podcast. Again, remind me of the name. It's Top Advisor Podcast?
TopAdvisorPodcast.com. Yep.
That Yeti mug you're drinking from, is that on your swag store?
No, this is a gift to people who are guests on my Top Advisor Podcast.
Hey, let's get on that.
Like you need another mug.
That's a good one, though. I like it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to Always On with Duncan McPherson, where our objective is to enable professionals to always be working on their business and on themselves. Want to learn more about Duncan and his team? Visit ParetoSystems.com. Don't forget to click the follow button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the hosts and/or guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Pareto Systems. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast is powered by Proudmouth, the Influence Accelerators. If you're like me and want to spend more time educating people and less time selling, Proudmouth helps turn Main Street experts like you into trusted mainstream authorities. They will help amplify your influence over a growing audience of magnetically attracted fans. Visit Proudmouth.com to learn more.